And topic we've talked about it several times here on the program, especially since it is before the General Assembly this year, are these quote-unquote skill games that you may have seen in convenience stores, restaurants, what have you, in the area. And they look kind of like slot machines. They are not. And right now they are legal, I think, everywhere except these are Charlottesville or Albemarle, where the local Commonwealth attorney has said, no, they violate the law. And this is being debated up in Richmond right now. It does not look great for them. But we're going to talk now with Mike Barley. He is a spokesman for Queen of Virginia. And Mike, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So first, tell us about Queen of Virginia, about this company. Do you just have skill games across the country? Is it just Virginia? And are you the only company with them in the state?
No, there's multiple companies that have different games in the state. They all have varying platforms. The difference really is, and we do have games across the country in different markets. The difference between our games and other games potentially is some games out there are really nothing more than slot machines, and they masquerade as skill games. Our games don't have payout rates, which means that when you play them, there's no odds set, because we'll often hear folks say, well, somebody's winning too much. Can you tighten up the machine or loosen up the machine? It's really based off of skill and your patience level and your ability to stay with it and play the game, because and that's the real difference between us and a gambling machine. As the law states, there's really three elements to make a game gambling. First, you have to have consideration, where you put the money in the machine. Second is chance. You press the button and you hope that you win. Third is reward. Money comes out and you get that reward. Our games, we take chance out of that equation and put predominant skill in, which means you have to play the game to affect the outcome. And that's really the big difference between our games and a slot machine.
All right, so this is not like a slot machine where it's going to keep 52% of the money, regardless of what happens. But what is the level of skill here? I mean, I've seen people say that this is, there may be some skill in it, but it's mostly chance, and the skill part really is very little. What specifically is the skill? How do the games work?
Well, look, the first game is a tic-tac-toe type game. It'll throw you multiple combinations. On some games where you have to determine what the best and most advantageous play to win the most amount of points is in a time period. And then the second game, if you're not successful there, you play like a Simon Says type game, where you are, it's very much exactly what I said, it's a Simon Says game. You follow a pattern, and each game gives you the opportunity to win 105% of your points back. Additionally, each game, you can preview the game to see what the outcome of the puzzle is going to be before you play it.
And so how many games do you all have across the state? How many machines do you have?
About 7,000.
And are these primarily in convenience stores? Are they in bars, restaurants? Where do people find them?
Convenience stores, bars, restaurants, taverns, and truck stops.
And so do you know how much the machines are paying out thus far?
Well, as I said earlier, a slot machine will have a payout rate on them. So we don't set what that amount is. Like a casino knows how much they're making each month before they sure. Even have people. It's based off attendance. Ours, though, we can judge by history how much they've paid out. On average, we pay out about 92% back to the player.
And I noticed one of the things that you've talked about in defending the machines is the effect on small business. What have you heard from business owners who have these in their stores?
It's been a game changer. A lot of these folks, when you look at things that have changed, whether it's online buying or, the fact that you can order your dinner off of an app now and have it delivered to your house, this allows folks to come in, stay a little bit longer, buy an extra drink, buy a meal, and really it's helping these establishments not only grow, but really survive in a tough market.
Now let's talk about where these bills stand in the legislature. What action has been taken in the, let's talk about first the House and then the Senate. Has the House banned these things? Are they going to tax them? Where do we stand halfway through the legislative session?
Well, right now it seems that the legislature is leaning towards more of a ban. We're still working on some different amendments that may give us some opportunity to work and stay in the market. We're working on that hard. You know, I think coming into the session, we are looking at the legislature is looking at a number of different proposals. You know, whether it was casino gambling or you know, working with us to help small businesses. And right now, it appears that they're going with the Vegas route, which is disappointing because, as I said, there's about 2,300 small businesses that would be affected by a ban on skill games, and those are Virginia jobs. And that's Virginia income. And the bet on casinos, and we have no problem with casinos. We don't believe we affect their outcome. If you're going to a casino, it's a destination. You're going there. You want to gamble. But what you're going to see is those revenues for the state aren't going to come in a minimum of 3 years, if that, because you're going to have a licensing period. You're going to have to award those casino licenses. There could be lawsuits pending on, historically, the fight over those casino licenses. That's a bet that could last a long time. And quite frankly, they're betting on Vegas and the Hard Rock, and you know, they're leaving the folks and the small businesses out.
Now, one of the things I think raised a lot of red flags for lawmakers was late last year, the Virginia Lottery came out and said that it was potentially losing tens of millions, maybe over $100 million in revenue to these skill games. What effect are you all having on the lottery? I'll take it you dispute that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at, if anyone's being truthful about the lottery, they would look at every state and see that they're all losing. They're down on revenue right now. It has nothing to do with skill games. It has something to do with the Mega Millions and the Powerball. They haven't had a jackpot this past fiscal year that was anywhere near what they've had. Last year, they had three major jackpots. This year, they've had none. So that's the bigger culprit, but we've become the scapegoat. And a lot of our retailers will tell you that they're lottery play is as consistent as it has been. What you find is somebody wins on lottery, they play skill games. If somebody wins on skill games, they play lottery.
You sort of figure win one, you'll win the other then?
Yeah, or, I mean, you know, look, you have success on one, you tend to take some of that money and put it in the other.
Now, the governors and his administration have recommended taxing and regulating these games. Are you trying to work with the administration to get something through
Absolutely.
The assembly?
Like I said, these are 2,300 Virginia small businesses that are going to be affected by a ban on skill games. And our company went to them, and there aren't a lot of companies and industries that go to the government and say, please tax and regulate us, and we're one of them. And we believe we can provide hundreds of millions of dollars to the Commonwealth and tax revenue, while also regulating a business that will exist in the gray market, whether they ban them or not. Our company may go away with a ban and will, because we'll abide by the law. But I will tell you that Virginia's banned sweepstakes games three times now, and they're still out in the streets. So without enforcement, all they're going to do is allow a black market industry to come in, set up shop, and they're going to keep doing this. They'll do it in back rooms and others, but they'll still be here. Instead of taking a problem they have and getting the revenue from it, pulling it out of the shadows, that seems to me like a better idea than what they're planning to do.
Well, let me ask you, not to put too fine a point on it here, but I've been reading some of the stories about this, and Janet Howell, Senator, who's head of the Finance Committee, essentially said, look, the amount of money you all are offering to the state is not enough for us to legalize these things. I mean, is it just a matter of, you know, you working out how much you're going to pay the state?
Look, we've put up and offered and still continue to negotiate how much we can put up. There's also a fine point where if you tax something too much, it will cease to exist. And there's a balance there. If we make it not worthwhile enough for the establishment to have them in, they're not going to have them in their establishment. So it's a matter of trying to find that fine point. But if they're, you know, the one thing that's important to note is we don't know, we're not a slot machine, so we can't set our payout rate. So it's a little bit different than having slot machines on every corner, and that's really an important difference. And I don't think the legislature, from our discussions, is in the mood to have slot machines on every corner. So it's a little bit of a fine point. Look, the revenue we want to provide, and we have modeled out with independent studies that we can provide, depending on how they regulate and where they limit the machines, you know, where we currently are, you could maybe get $500,000 almost by the third year annually.
Well, let me ask you one more thing. You're speaking with Mike Barley, spokesman for Queen of Virginia. One of the biggest complaints people have brought up when they talk about legalizing casinos is what effect does it have on people who are prone to be problem gamblers? Can you assure the state that your machines are not going to ruin people's lives, addict them to gambling?
Well, again, our games are not technically gambling. I would say that any type of entertainment like this, whether it's lottery or anything else, has the same potential to do that, and their services that people we can provide and it could be afforded. There wasn't a proposal in the legislation to help with a gambling fund to help with problem gambling, and that's, you know, something we certainly would be fine with.
All right, very good. Mike Barley, spokesman for Queen of Virginia, the company making a lot of these quote-unquote skill games look like slot machines, what have you, and slot, yeah, that you may have seen around the area. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, so this story amused me this morning, and you can find it at studyfinds.org. And so a place called channelmum.com, which is a website in Britain for expectant mothers, and they get into all sorts of things. And they surveyed a number of Brits and found that if their people want to have unique names for their kids, but also that they have some other sort of different ideas. Like about one third of parents said they didn't want a clearly male or female name. About 10% of parents each picked a name that they liked, and then they combined them to make a hybrid name, which for this one little girl was Tiamii, so watch out for that one, I guess I would say. Another 9% tried to come up with names that would honor family members, you know, like maybe you name the kid after a grandfather or, you know, a great aunt or something like that. Now, what really got me, though, is that a fair amount of the parents actually pick names that will stand out on social media so that their kids are easier to find. And this is still a small number. This is only about 6% as of right now, but that's about every 16th parent. And some of the things they're coming up for are things like Mavery and Renlo and things like this, figuring that if people want to follow their kids on social media and they search their names, you know, Renlo is a lot different than Mike.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing.
There's a lot of Mike Smiths, probably.
Right. Now, about one-eighth of parents said that they are worried that even though they've worked on this name, they come up with this very unique name, that it will reflect poorly on their child or on them. Mm-hmm. The kid may be teased for it or something like that. And I have to say, I know that it is all the rage now. We went through the stage in the late 90s, early aughts, where kids were being named after products like, you know, Timberland shoes and things like that. And, you know, social media has become so important to so many people. I guess this was eventual and probably will become even more of a thing as we go.
Yeah, like I said, everybody has a presence on there now. And, you know, a name like Brian Wiegand, if you know how to spell that, of course.
Right.
They're going to be able to find you when they search your name. They will find you, most likely.
Well, you'd hope, although I have to admit, I mean, the first time it ever occurred to me that people were Googling their own names, this has obviously been a long time ago, so I didn't think, there's like a Brian Wiegand. How many of those could there be? What the? I'm not some college student in Indiana. I can't sell you a cell phone. What? I have to be. I was a little disappointed how many of them there were, and my name was like 14th. Mm-hmm. It was, and you know, I'm just like, come on, people.
Yeah, I think there was another Ashley Scammerhorn too. There was a mix up at a bank somewhere else, and they had put a deposit in, but they put it in my account instead of hers. It was a whole weird thing. So names are strange. It makes me think of, there was a joke running a while back that someone had named their kid LaDasha, which was L-A dash mark A, LaDasha. Also, one of my
favorites.
See,
I would say that as La-A.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was, it looks like La-A when you look at it. And there was another name that when you look at it, when you look at the word, you would say it differently, but it was pronounced Shithid.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to spell that one out.
See, now that's like urban legend stuff, isn't it? That's like Romangelo and Arangelo, the twins.
Yeah, I don't know if that was real or not. Oh, like A.A. Ron, you know. Well, that was just a gag. To pronounce all the names. Yeah. I think most of this is gags, too.
But
it reminds me of that, people wanting unique names. But there were studies a while back talking about how your name can lead to a lot of your success, too. Like, if people have a hard time pronouncing or spelling your name, you may not get called on in class as much. Weird stuff like that. I don't know how much I believe that, but you know, there's a big difference between, like, you can remember a name like, I don't know, Post Malone, again, easier than, you know, Richard Smith. Sorry, Richard.
Sorry,
there's
Richard.
Probably a lot of Richard Smiths in the world, or John Smith, even better. Lots
of John
Smiths.
There's no shortage of those whatsoever.
But not a lot of LaDashas or Shithids.
Just as well, in all honesty.